let's get moving here. We are still in Perek Vav, chapter 6. We spent a lot of time on Gideon's identity and developing a sense of what's going on under Midian and so on. But Gideon has now been greeted by someone who is a malach, although he doesn't know it's a malach at this stage. He thinks it's a Navi, perhaps. He has responded extremely harshly. But the message of the Navi is Hashem is indeed going to be with him, and he is going to strike Midian. And that brings us to Pasuk Yud Zayin, sentence 17, and the first of three miracles that Gideon is going to receive, or sets of miracles that Gideon is going to receive. Vayomer Elav, Gideon says to the Malach, Im namatzasi chein be'enecha, if I have found favor in your eyes, ve'asisa li os, sha'ata medaber imi, he says, give me a sign that you are speaking with me. You notice, by the way, the word sha'ata shows up in davening also. People usually just misread it as sha'ata. But in modim, you have the word sha'ata. It's an odd grammatical structure. I don't know enough grammar to be able to tell you why it's a kamatz under the shin. But in any case, give me a sign that you are speaking to me. That's his demand. Al na samush mizeh ad bui elecha. Don't leave. I'm coming back. Votseisi es minchasi. I'm going to produce my gift for you. A mincha here is a reference to a gift, not the technical meaning like in the Beis HaMikdash of a flower offering. It's a gift. V'inachti lefanecha, I'll put it before you. This, by the way, I think is the origin of the term mincha, for like mincha davening. It's a gift you're bringing to God. Vayomar anochi eshev ad shuvecha. And the Malach responds, saying, okay, I'll wait. So he brings back a goat, as well as an ephah of flour made into matzah. Habasar sambasal, he puts the meat in a basket. Vahamarak samba parur, and the broth he puts in some pot. Vayotze elav al tachas hayla, and he brings it out underneath a tree. Vayagash. Vayagesh. Can't read mine anymore. I need reading glasses. Vayagesh. He brought it out. Sorry? You have Vayagash? Okay. The Vayomer Elav Malach Valokim. So the Malach says to him, watch what I can do. Kachas habasar rez hamatzos, v'anach el hasela halaz. Take the meat, take the matzah, and put it on that stone. V'as hamarak shefoch, but dump out the soup. Malach don't like soup. The Vayaz Kain, and that's what he does. V'yishlach Malach Hashem es kitzei ha-mishen es asher b'yodau. And the Malach extends a staff that he's holding. Evidently, he's holding a staff. And he uses it to touch the meat and touch the matzah. Vatal ha'esh min hatzur. Fire comes up from the stone. Vatochlas ha'basar v'es ha'matzos. It consumes the meat. It consumes the matzah. U'malach Hashem halach me'enav. And poof, the Malach disappears. So before we get to Gideon's reaction, what's going on in this story? There are some questions we ought to be asking here. What's strange here? I mean, the disappearing act qualifies, but beyond that, like, what's where does the logic become difficult in this story?
It's a private offering. You be making a korbanot.
Right. So this is a gift. I don't think I would call it a korban. I don't think I would call it a sacrifice. It doesn't seem to be structured as a sacrifice. Sacrifices involve ritual slaughter, you know, putting the blood on the mizbeach. Like, none of that is going on here. But what's strange?
Well, he says make an ot, and how did this become the ot? Like, where was the understanding here?
Yeah. He said, I want you to make an oath. Wait right there. I'm going to bring you a gift. It sounds like these are really two different things, and the Malach is choosing to combine them by turning consumption of the gift into the oath, into the sign. That's what it seems like. But what's the goal here? What does Gideon ask for the sign for? Why does he want this?
To prove he's a Malach.
Is that what he said? make a sign for me that you are speaking with me. I am speaking with you. We've been having a conversation. How is this going to prove that he is speaking with him? If it's going to prove that he's a malach, I have a problem, because it's going to tell us right after this that Gideon only now realizes, hey, this is a malach. In other words, he doesn't seem to think it's a malach. This isn't a sign that he can use. Right? Like Moshe asks Hashem, the Jews aren't going to believe me. And Hashem says, don't worry about it. Here's this cool stick, you can turn it into a snake, right? You know, put your hand inside your coat, take it out of the coat, change its colors. These are things that he can replicate in order to demonstrate that something unique and special is going on here. Gideon can't do anything with this.
Is this like a test Abraham and the three Machim who came, and he's Gideon seeing if this individual would in fact be?
So with Abraham and the Malachim, it's not usually taken as a test. You know, it's usually taken as he doesn't think they're anything other than travelers, and he gives them food, because that's what Abraham does. They and have been feeding people ever since. The idea that it's a test, I don't really see in that story. This is some kind of I don't know what. So a few points here. First of all, note the phrase, Imna matzasi chein beinecha. That's not new with Gideon. Gideon is cribbing that line. Who else uses the words Imna matzasi chein beinecha? Avram. Right? Avram uses it when he wants his Eved to go get away for Yitzchak. That's at least one place where he uses it. He says, if I found favor in your eyes, then go ahead, da, da, da. And Moshe uses it quite a bit with Hashem. Right? Like after the Egel, after the golden calf. He doesn't want Hashem to destroy the Jews. So this phrase is one that Avram uses and Moshe uses, which means probably it's a good one for you to use when you talk to God, because it puts you in good company. But it fits into a bigger pattern. I think we've already begun to note comparisons between Gideon and Avraham, and we're going to see more of that today, and comparisons between Gideon and Moshe as well. Like his harsh reaction when the Malach speaks to him, defending the Jews and saying, hey, it's your fault, right? You haven't done miracles for us, is something that Moshe does similarly. But what is it that he wants out of this Malach? So three different approaches to what he wants. The first answer to give is the most basic, but it's clearly wrong. And that is that what Gideon wants is some way that people will believe him about this, like Moshe. The problem, again, being what we said before, which is, but he didn't give him a sign he can replicate. The fact that you tell people, not only that, but he made cards disappear, or told me what number I was thinking of, or whatever, isn't going to have any meaning. So that's not it. Second possibility, sort of what Howie suggested, I think it was Howie, is, I don't know that you're a legitimate emissary of God. Give me a sign that you are, in fact, an emissary of God. And that's Radak. If you take a look on the sheet, it's source number one. Amar lo b'shem Hashem ki ehya imach. The Malach said, but he didn't know it was a Malach, but the visitor said, in the name of God, I will be with you. Lefichach amar lo Gideon, so Gideon says back, Im kensh nevi elokim ata, if that's really what you are, you're a Navi of God, u'bishlichu so ataba, you're working for him, ta'asa li'os sha'atama daveri mi b'shem Hashem. I'd like a sign to demonstrate that you are speaking in the name of God. Mitzudat David has a similar answer. Mitzudat David says Gideon had no familiarity with prophecy at this stage, and so he wants to know, like, how do I identify this as prophecy? Malbim has more. But I like Ibn Ezra on this. It's Ibn Ezra not commenting here, but commenting on Abraham and Bris Bein Habasarim. Remember that Hashem says to Abraham in Parshas Lech Lecha, you are going to have children, and they're going to be like the stars, and they're going to get this land, and so on. And Abraham says to Hashem, Bama Eida Ki Irashena, with what shall I know that I am going to inherit this land, that I'm going to take this land? What he wants is more than just a prophecy, Ibn Ezra says. Take a look at source number two. This is Ibn Ezra commenting on Abraham's story. He gives you a few reasons why Abraham demands a sign. Kitam shvuas Hashem, sheyi adavar below tenai. He says you want an oath from God for something to indicate that things are unconditional. It's going to happen no matter what. Ki klal kol hanavuos heim al tanai, because as a general principle, prophecies are conditional. Right? Everyone gets all upset when Yonah goes to Nineveh and he says in 40 days it's going to be overturned, then it's not overturned. But prophecies are conditional. You know, you have these cute answers, well, the city was overturned, but if the conditions change, then what Hashem does changes. That's why Avram isn't doing anything wrong. What Avram wants is a bris. He wants a covenant with God. And the way he does the covenant is the mincha, the offering that he brings to God. And so I would like to take this idea that you find with Avram, that Avram asks for a sign. Because he wants to know, is Hashem really going to act on our behalf? And that's what Gideon is doing. Gideon wants to know, not just, you're saying that things are going to be better, but I want a bris. I want to know that things are going to be better. And that answers the question of why he brings the mincha.
Except there, yeah. God tells Avram exactly what to bring. It's not Avram bringing what was for Brit Ben Aftarim. It was God telling Avram, this is what to do.
Correct.
Which makes sense why it's a Brit between God and Avram. Still Avram then. Okay, not Avram yet.
Yes.
Here, Gideon's doing everything.
Right. But that's true also in other cases of Brit. Meaning, Avram and Avimelech make a Brit. So Avram goes out and brings out the sheep, and Avimelech says to him, what's that about? And he says, because we're making a brit.
Right, but so, in all those cases, it says a brit is being made. There's nothing...
Right, here we do not see the word brit. Yeah. That's this is my application of that, but I'm not the first one to do so. I want to see if I... I didn't bring it on the sheet. Rav Saad Yagon in Emunos Videos. I thought I had it, but maybe on one of the later signs. Is it on the sheet here? If not, we'll end up seeing it with one of the later ones. Yeah, it's not on the sheet here. But Rav Saad Yagon in Mamar Zayin and Munos Videos talks about it in terms of Gideon's requests for signs. Gideon believes in divine power. Gideon's response was, you know, you did all these miracles way back when. Where are your miracles now? What he's not confident in is that Hashem is going to act for him at this stage. And that's what he's looking for. And so the manner of a brit, the manner of a covenant is you give something, and it's true that it's different here in the sense that he volunteers it without being told what to bring. But to me, that's what he's doing here. And I think what he's doing is something that carries a lot of weight across Jewish history. It's more than just what Gideon does at this point. Because he's not looking for proof that God is real. He's not looking for proof that God is capable of doing what he has promised. What Gideon does not believe, essentially, is that there's a bond between the nation and God. And that's what he wants demonstrated. God is expecting Gideon to go to war, right? He wants me to put myself on the line. I need to know that he believes in me, that he believes in us. And that's why he wants an oat, for which he brings out a meal to set up the brit. That's my contention here, and we'll have to see the piece from Saad Yagon later on. The Malach recognizes that as a valid thing to do. That's the idea here. I noted last time, at the very end, the amount of flour that he brings, right? He brings an epha of flour. That's a very large amount of flour. According to the Da'at Mikra, it's 25 liters of flour, which is a ridiculous amount of flour to be using, except that the idea is, where they used to bring a mincha in the Beis HaMikdash, was you bring a large amount first of very coarse stuff, and then you filter it down, you sift it down. And it's an expression of respect that you went to all of this effort and all of this expense in order to get just the finest, and that's what you're going to use. But what I noted at the end last time is that an epha is 3 se'ah. Right, we said this last time? Ring a bell? That was 2 weeks ago. We had that off week in between. But 3 se'ah, where do we know 3 se'ah from? Uh-oh. It's not on your sheet.
2 weeks ago, Steve.
Yeah, it wasn't on that sheet either.
Yeah, I write notes.
I don't think I did. Oh, well, then you'll know. In the beginning of Parshas Vayera, Mahari Shalosh Siim Kemach Solet, Lushi Vasiugot. Avraham says to Sarah, for the Malachim, or visitors, whatever they are, rush, prepare 3 se'ah of flour. So in other words, Avraham brought for Malachim an ephah of flour. Gideon brings for the Malachim an ephah of flour. It's another parallel between the two of them. And then, of course, you see the matzah, which goes back to what we said initially, that it combines with the fact that Gideon said, you did all these miracles when we left Mitzrayim, to suggest that this is actually occurring Pesach time. The fitting also with the fact that he's processing what may have been the first of the grain. The business with the soup, Abar Benel says, is meant to cool off the rock. In other words, makes it a greater miracle when you dump liquid on the stone, which is like what Eliyahu did at Har HaKarmel, and Ralbag makes that point. If you take a look at source number 3, he says, "V'zed domel mofet shenatan Eliyahu b'Har HaKarmel." This is like the miracle that Eliyahu performed at Har HaKarmel. Remember, Eliyahu brings down fire from the heavens to consume his offering. He pours water on the stones first. So he says, these actions resemble Eliyahu's actions. This supports the idea that Pinchas is Eliyahu. They're playing different roles here. Because Pinchas here, as Ralbag reads it, is the visitor. In other words, it's not a malach according to him. According to him, it's Pinchas. So Pinchas here is the visitor, who is playing at being a malach, giving signs. In the story on Har HaKarmel, Eliyahu is the one requesting a sign. But it's the idea of dumping the water on the stone that's the parallel between the two. Okay. Rob, you know, I can give you a paper copy.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah? Okay.
Is there any significance that the rock...
A little bigger on there.
The name of the rock has changed from a cella to which is the name of God.
I wrote that into my notes, and you know, this business of the transition, it's especially strange because commentators do see substantive differences between Sur and Selah, but I have not seen anybody here comment on the change. It's very strange to me. The other thing that I thought was really interesting was the direction of the fire. Right? Did you notice the it's Vatal HaEsh Min HaTzur. The fire is coming up from the stone. It's not fire coming down from heaven to consume the carbon. The fire is instead coming up from the rock.
Well, that's if you take Tzur as a rock rather than one of the God's names, and it's coming from God.
Oh.
That's what I was trying to read.
That's what you're trying to see there. I see. Hmm.
But do they say God is Hatsur?
It wouldn't be Vatal then. I mean, God is Hatsur. Hatsur Tamim Pa'alo. But,
No, but in this kind of, it doesn't fit.
I mean,
say Min Hatsur.
I wouldn't read it that way anyway. It would only be, I mean, what Howie's suggesting is a remez, not that it's actually meant to be read as the literal translation. So what does Gideon do in response? How does Gideon react to this miracle? Pasuk Chaf Bey, sentence 22. Vayar Gideon ki malach Hashem hu. Ha, what do you know? It's a malach. Except the Quench Ralbag, who says, no, it's not, it's a Navi. Vayomer Gideon, aha. Whoa. Hashem Elokim, ki alkein ra'isi malach Hashem panim el panim. Look at that, I've seen a malach. Vayomer lo Hashem shalom lecha al tira. And God, meaning the malach, says to him, don't be afraid, lo tamus, you're not going to die. Va'even sham Gideon misbeach Hashem, va'ikralo Hashem Shalom, arayam azeh odenu be'ofrat avi ha'ezri. So Gideon builds a misbeach, and then va'ikralo Hashem Shalom is a little bit odd. Different views in the Mefarshim as to what this was. The Rashi and Tosus in Maseches Megillah and most of commentators in general say what Metzudat David says in source number 4, which is he's not naming the Mizbeach. Rather, Po Amar Li Hashem Shalom. Right? God expressed Shalom to me on this site. So he declared, look at that, Hashem Shalom. That's the way that that's the way that most commentators read it. Malbim says that Hashem is actually naming the Mizbeach Shalom. Vayikralo Hashem Shalom. That's the way that the Malbim reads it. If you look at source number 5, he says, Lafi apshat perusho, shashem karalo shalom. Hashem called it shalom. And he says in the parentheses, v'chein das bal hata'amim, shesama tipcha al Hashem. That's why the notes are the way they are. Meaning the tipcha, which is a closing note, is on the name of Hashem. Vayikralo Hashem, pause, shalom. Hashem said of it, shalom. Rutzalomar. Because you have to remember the context for this. The locals are idolaters. He says he's worried that they're going to interrupt him, that they're going to disturb him, these local idolaters, as in fact is some of the, you know, it's something that's going to happen later on. Mizbeach hazeh kara Hashem lo shalom. God calls this altar shalom, shalo hersu bnei ha'ir. It was not destroyed by the locals. V'hu od ad hayom ba'afrat. As you can see, it's still around in Afrat. Zecher l'neis, to remember the miracle. So the Malbim says Hashem is declaring of the Mizbeach shalom, meaning it will be safe. So I have two views now. Main view is that Gideon says about the Mizbeach, this is where God said Shalom. Secondary view, Hashem says of the Mizbeach, Shalom. And then the last take is the Gemara in Shabbos, which I brought you in source number 6, which says actually, Shalom is the name of Hashem. And he is saying Hashem Shalom. The Gemara says, also Adam Shitin Shalom Lachaveru Beis Hamercha. So you're not allowed to say Shalom Aleichem to somebody if you meet them in the bathhouse. Because the Pasuk says, Vayukolo Hashem Shalom. He called Hashem Shalom. Hashalom is a name of God, which is an idea we find elsewhere as well. It's not only on this spot. It's not one of the names that may not be erased. We have certain names that you're not allowed to erase. Shalom is not on that list. But there are some people who are actually very careful and they won't write the word Shalom. Because of this idea found in the Gemara here.
Is it the same Ephrat as today?
This is Ophrat. Ephrat is with an Aleph.
Oh.
Yeah. This is in the land of Menashe, Abiha Isri. So this is this is different. Okay. So what we have then at this stage is Gideon has been approached by what is a malach, except Ralbach thinks it's a Navi, who has charged him with leading the Jews out from under Midian. We said that Gideon might be selected because of his own traits, or because of his association with his father, who is the leader of the local idolatry, and therefore he is in a position to strike at the local idols, or not. We don't know. Maybe he's chosen for nothing. Just
he's there.
Man on the spot. That's right. There are lots of parallels to Avram and Moshe. We're going to talk more about this, the Avram parallels in particular. But at least one message in these parallels is the renewal of the old victories. Something which Shmuel is going to make a point of as well, which is Hashem has always saved you and he's going to continue to save you. And you will hear echoes of what he did for you in the past with the things that he does for you in the present. Gideon demands a sign, whether because he wants to verify the message or to know that God is actually going to follow through, is unclear. Okay, so now that you've got your sign, Gideon, it's time for you to go do your job. So, Pasuk Chafei. Vayihi balayla hahu. Which is, you know, very portentous beginning there. And it was on that night. Vayomer lo Hashem. And Hashem says to him, Kach es par hashor asher le'avicha. Ufar Hasheni Sheva Shanim. Take your father's par hashor. Par hashor is an odd term. A par is a bull. A shor is an ox. Those are actually two different things. So what is a par hashor? How do your translations read this?
bullock.
Mm.
The bullock of the ox.
That doesn't explain anything.
The tautology is explained by taking ox as descriptive and understanding the phrase as a large ox.
Right.
An ox as big as a bullock.
Okay, so they're quoting Radak.
Young ox.
Kimchi.
Young right? ox you have?
Younger ox.
Yeah. Yeah, Kimchi is Radak.
Oh,
the, it's not a Korean dish. Yeah.
There's two. It says there's two.
Well, the second one is the same. Right, we have to get to the second
one. So they say it's a young ox.
A young ox.
Yeah, a young bull.
So the Da Mikra says that Par Hashor, Par, means a male cow, right? So he says it must mean that it's a male ox in this case. Par is being used for male. Rashi says Shor can mean pretty much anything, any quality of Shor. This means the choicest ox. Whereas Radak has, as already read from his, an ox-sized bull. It's a really good animal. That's for sure.
I've got Yosef Caro explaining that a par refers to a two-year-old and a shor refers to a younger age.
Right. So you have that. That's an idea in the Gemara. So they're going to say that that's a younger one. But it's not Caro. It's actually Kara. Rabbi Yosef Caro is the writer of the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yosef Kara, Mari Kara, is writer of a commentary on Tanakh. They wrote it with an O at the end?
Yeah.
Huh, that's very interesting.
Or it could be some sort of hybrid. Half bull, half fox.
Unlikely.
They probably can interbreed, though.
Can they?
I don't know, but I would imagine they can.
But this is the first one. And then the second one is a seven-year-old animal. That's going to be really important. I just want to finish the sequence here first. V'harastas mizbacha bala sheli avicha. So the message for Gidon is, I want you to take these two animals. I want you to destroy your father's altar for the Baal. V'asa asherah sheralav tichros. And cut down the asherah that is upon it. Asherah is an unclear form of avodah zarah. Usually people assume that the asherah is a tree that is worshipped. However, and we discussed this in the Avodah Zarah share a while back, from the language in Tanakh, it sounds almost like, in certain cases, they had an idol they kept under the tree. Not under, like, in the ground, but, like, underneath the shadow, you know, underneath the branches of the tree. And it was a type of worship that was done in, you know, an arboreal area. But it wasn't that the tree was being worshipped. It's unclear. Either way, the tree is bad news. Cut down the tree. Uvanisa mizbeach l'shem elokecha al rosh hamaoz hazeh b'ma'aracha. And what I want you to do instead is build a mizbeach at the head of the ma'oz. Ma'oz? Ma'oz tzur? The fortress? The b'ma'aracha. The ma'aracha is just, Da Mikra says, the arranged area, the area on top of this ma'oz. Interestingly, Radak, Ralbag, Mitzudat David suggest that Ma'oz is actually the stone where he brought the carbon for the, not the carbon, the gift for the Malach Navi beforehand. But he says, build a Mizbeach. V'akachtas ha-parasheni, v'ha'alisa ola, take the second bull, the one that's 7 years old, bring that as a carbon. Ba'atzeha asherah asher tichros. And not only that, I want you to use the asherah wood to do it. So Vayikach Gidon Asaran Hashem Me'avadav. So Gidon gets a minion together. Right? He gets 10 men from his servants. Vayaz Kasher Diber Elav Hashem, and he does what Hashem told him to do. Vayikasher Yereyas Beis Aviv Asanshei Ha'ir Me'asos Yomam Vayaz Laila. This is always a strange pasuk for me. He's afraid of his household. He's afraid of the people in the city. So he says, let's do this at night. But he takes 10 men. Is there a better way to like make sure that everybody's going to know exactly who did it? Right? I mean, if you don't want promotion, you really ought to limit your number of participants. It's kind of odd that he chose the minion for this. So let's go back for a second. The 7 year bull is very interesting. The Amdat Mikra thinks that this was a carbon that had just become ripe, so to speak. 7 years is a magic number. And so they waited for 7 years and it's ready to be brought as an offering, and now he is sabotaging their offering by using it instead as a carbon for God. That's a difficult statement, though. Because, generally speaking, you didn't sacrifice 7-year-old animals. They were sacrificed when they were much younger. It's odd to wait 7 years. So I would look at what Ralbag and Malbim do with this instead. Remember that the Jews had been under Midian for how long?
7 years.
7 years, correct. So Ralbag says that they dedicated this animal for Avodah Zarah in the beginning, when things started with Midian. Right? Take a look at source number 7. V'hine hayu muktzim sheva shanim. He thinks these animals were set aside for 7 years. V'zeyo rek hizat ta'uz hayame isant chalas ha-shibud. That means that this error, meaning following Avodah Zarah, was with them from the very beginning. Kizayin shanim hayu tachas yad Midian kishakar bazat. They were under Midian for 7 years at this stage. So Ralbag thinks both of these animals have been dedicated for Avodah Zarah 7 years ago. Malbim says that actually it's the other way. It is still Avodah Zarah, but it's not part of Midian's enslavement, but rather it's the animal they put away for the celebration when enslavement to Midian is over. He says, Shebeis hechelu Midian limshol al Yisrael, when Midian started to rule over Israel, nadru la'akriva parazel Avodah Zarah, they vowed that they were going to bring this bull for Avodah Zarah, eis yivashu mi Midian, when they would be saved from Midian. They've had this animal waiting. So what Gideon is doing is very interesting now. He's taking the celebration animal, and indeed, this is the start of throwing off Midian. But he's saying, the credit doesn't go to the Avodah Zarah. The credit goes to God. So I'm going to break the altar that was for the idols, and we're going to do this as a carbon to Hashem to thank Him for throwing off Midian. That's the way that that Malbim reads what's going on. However, does he bring both of them as a carbon?
Just the second one.
Just the second one. So why did he bring both? Why did you take two when you only wanted to use one? So Abarbanel is very funny. Abarbanel says it was a decoy. I didn't bring it on the sheet. He says it's a decoy. The first one belongs to Yoash. The first animal there is, it says, Parashor Asher Levicha, your father's Parashor. So he says it's a decoy so that Gideon will have the ability to say, when he's accused, I had nothing to do with this. Look, our own animal was stolen. Right? It's a way out of being identified. I find this to be difficult as an explanation. First of all, again, you got the 10 men. Like, if you didn't want to be ID'd, you're doing everything wrong. That's number one. Number two, he is going to be public in the end. Like, he's not going to be private. He's leading a rebellion against Midian. Like, how are you really, you know, covering yourself by stealing your own animal? So the Dab Mikra is more practical. He says, if you have to go to the Ma'oz, remember, he's of the belief the Ma'oz is some fortress area farther away. You have to go to the Ma'oz and bring all the wood from the Mizbeach you broke, from the Asherah, right? He says, you want to carry that yourself? No. So you take the other animal and use it to load up the wood.
Yeah.
Sorry?
A strong animal,
right. Radak, though, and Rabag give you a different approach. It's in source number 9 on the sheet. The Hebrew's at the bottom of one side, English at the top of the next. He says, V'yidmeh shehemito ba'ofen shaloyenu mimenu kedin hamukta. He says, that which has been dedicated for Avodah Zarah is now off limits. So he kills the animal so that they don't use it. He says you didn't need to say that explicitly in the Navi, because everybody knows you're not allowed to use such animals for yourself. So what Gideon actually did was he used one as a karban, and the other one he got rid of.
If we're saying that, then yes. The one that's 7 years shouldn't be allowed to be used because it was set aside.
Good. Yes. No, you're right. So what is he doing bringing a carbon at all? And not only that, what did he use for the carbon? For the Mizbeach, he used Asherah wood. You're not allowed to do that. So take a look at source number 10. The Gemara in Temura is in shorthand. I expanded it in the English. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana says, you know, Shmona Dvarim Hitiru Ba'oso Laila. They permitted 8 things that night, meaning there were 8 different laws that he broke. First of all, and this goes back to what Lou said, chutz, right? He's bringing this karban, now it is a karban, outside of the Mishkan in Shiloh. When the Mishkan stands in Shiloh, you're not supposed to be doing your own altars. Valayla, he's bringing a karban at night, also a no-no. Vizarut, as well as the fact that he's not a Kohen, right? He's from Menashe. Uklei Sharet, he's using the, he's not using the vessels of the Mishkan that are supposed to be used. Uklei Asherah, and what is he using? He's using the utensils they use to serve the Asherah. How the Gemara knows that is not clear. It didn't actually say that explicitly. Va'asei Asherah, he's using the wood from the Asherah, that we do know is wrong. Umukza, as well as Howie points out, an animal that's been dedicated for Avodah Zarah. V'ne'evad, and an item that has been worshipped. And again, we don't know that it's been worshipped, but apparently that's the assumption here, is that it's been worshipped. Rabbi Avram ben Harambam says, and I didn't even bother to bring it on the sheet, because it's obvious, right? He says, well, I guess this is Haras Shah. Right? This is special dispensation. There's a special ruling that, okay, you're allowed to do this in this circumstance. However, you have to ask yourself, every time there's a Haras Shah, one of the key things to know when you learn Navi is Haras Shah happens, you know, at least once a book. That someone's going to do something, you look at it and say, wait, that's against the rules, and someone's going to say, yeah, Haras Shah. Right? Ezra brings certain unique karbanos to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash. No, Haras Shah, okay, that's the way it is. Eliyahu is going to go up on Har HaKarmel when you have a Beis HaMikdash. He's going to bring a karban there. And everyone's going to say, yeah, Haras Shah. But the thing with Haras Shah, the thing with these special dispensations is there has to be a reason to do this. It isn't just Nevi'im get to break rules from time to time as long as they don't do it, you know, on an ongoing basis. It's when a Navi sees a particular need, then he's able to say, okay, in this case, we're going to break the rules. So my question to you is, what is the need here such that Gidon has to break the rules? If he wants to rally the people against Midian, he can do that. If he wants to bring a karban to God, he can do that. If he wants to smash the altar, he can do that. None of that requires breaking any laws. Why are you having him specifically do this in this way? What would you say? I've got 2 answers.
Well, if you go with the one of the explanations that the par was a par that was set aside till the idol would save them,
yeah,
then he's doing it this way to show that it's God that's going to save them, not the idol, and that what you put aside, you're wrong, and this is the way to go.
Right.
Which is similar to Eliyahu with the Nevi Baal, where he's basically saying, false God, real God, follow the real God.
Right. I think your first approach has to be what Howie is saying, which is, you are converting that which had been for the service of the Avodah Zarah, and where all your hopes were based on the Avodah Zarah, and converting it over to God. The Malbim, which I brought you in number 11, says this. Ubazen iskayem ha-kavana ha-eliyona. This fulfilled the celestial goal. La'archikam ha-yidei ma'aseh azos me'avodah zarah. Via this action, they will be distanced from idolatry. V'zeh ha-yachana el-hatshua sh'riftiach. And this would lay the foundation for the salvation that was promised. You're not going to be worthy of redemption while you're still serving Baal. When I did this with the women's shir, we did Shoft, and Roberta Newman pointed out, the rule breaking itself is actually part of the message. The fact that you are breaking the rules in order to do this may be seen as part of the message itself of converting the nation from Avodah Zarah to the service of God, even at this expense. But Ralbag has another answer, and Abarbanel brings it as well. It's not only about the impact on the nation, it's the impact on Gidon. Right? If you see what I brought you here in number 12. Hu asela sheinia chalav abasa v'amatzos v'hinei haisa kavana lahusif b'gidon emuna b'Hashem yizbarach. First of all, he believes the Ma'oz is not some far-off fortress. It's actually the spot where the whole thing had... where the whole scene had played out with the Navi/Malach. But also that the goal is about increasing Gidon's emuna, meaning Gidon comes from Avodah Zarah. That's his background. Whether it was Avodah Zarah blended with Judaism, it's still fundamentally idolatrous, at least in part. And so you're having him break his Avodah Zarah and use it for service of Hashem. That's a very powerful thing for him to do. If you think of in the Gemara when they talk about the people who are disqualified rabbinically from testifying, right, in court. So like a person who was a gambler, right, that whole set of activities. So they ask, how does he do tshuva? And the gambler, he has to break his chips. The idea is that he demonstrates he's no longer doing that which had been done. And here he's actually using the Avodah Zarah for the service of Hashem. So that's what Gidon is doing here. At this stage, Gidon is converting the Avodah Zarah into the service of Hashem, and he is doing it for the sake of himself, not only for the sake of what the nation will observe. He breaks all sorts of rules in order to do it. Malbim also adds a note here that the new Mizbeach is built from the stones of the old one, which is an interesting idea, sort of reminiscent of some other Mizbechot that we're familiar with, like Eliyahu on Har Carmel takes an old Mizbeach and rebuilds it in order to bring the carbon to Hashem. But Gidon does it with these 10 men. So Ralbag says he wants 10 men because it's a big job. You know, you have a lot to do, so use 10 men. But then he also adds the possibility that the goal was publicity and Kiddush Hashem. And I don't remember his wording now, but the Gemara talks about Kiddush Hashem and talks about specifically having 10 present for the sake of Kiddush Hashem. So that could be what he's alluding to, that the need for 10 is davka, in order to have Kiddush Hashem, he needs to have 10 present, v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael, and so on. Okay, so the people respond. Pasuk Chav Ches. V'yashkimu anshei ha'ir baboker. Everyone gets up bright and early. V'yinei nutaz mizbach ha'baal v'asher asher alav korasa. The altar of Baal is destroyed. The asherah that had been over it has been cut down. And the second bull was brought up there as a carbon. And the people all look to each other and say, who in the world did that? They go examining and they have to search. Finally, one of these 10 men breaks and says, actually it was Gidon who did it. So the people say to Yoash, look what your kid did. Bring him out, and he shall be put to death. He broke the altar of the Baal, and he chopped down the Asherah. And then Yoash does something which is very unclear. Yoash says to those who are standing upon him, and note that phrase, Omed Alav, is an aggressive term. Like, he feels like he is under threat here. The people they want blood. Ha'atem terivun la'Baal, are you going to fight for Baal? Im atem toshi unoso, are you going to save the Baal? Asher yariv lo yumas ad aboker, whoever fights for him will be killed before dawn. Im Elokim hu, if he's a god, yarev lo, then let him fight for himself. Kinasatas mizbecho, because he broke his mizbeach. If Baal has a problem with it, let Baal do something about it. Vayikralo vayomahu yirubal lemor yarev bo habal kinasatas mizbecho. And he calls Gidon on that day yirubal. So we'll see some debate as to how you get Yerubal from this, but he says, Yarev Bo'abal, Baal should fight him, Kinasatas Mizbecho, because he broke his Mizbeach. So there's a lot going on here. Whose side is Yoash on?
His son.
Is he?
Well, he doesn't want him killed.
Are you sure?
He doesn't want to do it himself. He wants Paul to do it.
In other words, is he sincere? Is my question. Meaning, you're a random city person with a pitchfork coming after Gideon, right? Yoash is your target because he must know where his son is. And Yoash says, what do you mean you want to do this? This is for Baal to do. It's heresy for you to act against my son. If the Baal has an issue with him, let the Baal take care of it. Do you think that he is sincere, or do you think that he's just, you know, stalling for time, trying to deter you? Remember, until that day, Yoash was the priest of the local idol, presumably a believer.
Depends what you were Baal means. In other words, is that a positive or a negative?
So that's one of the questions here. The word Yerubal itself is unclear. You can read the word Yerubal as Baal fearing, as the original meaning, but here it's being turned to mean Baal will fight him. Riv, Yerev Boa Baal. So that it's unclear, first of all, that it's Yoash doing the renaming. It doesn't actually say it in a clear way, but even if it is Yoash using it, the name itself lends itself to multiple meanings. You follow? Yoash is a very smart man. I think he's playing both sides. That's what it seems like. Even his line of whoever fights for him shall be killed is actually very unclear. And the Mefarshim go in different directions with it. Take a look. I brought you a selection here in 13, 14, and 15. Mitzudat David says the line means, whoever will fight for him will be killed by me by morning. Ralbag says, whoever would fight for Baal would be killed by morning, meaning they would only wait until morning to kill him. And then Malbim, if Baal possessed the ability, it would be appropriate for him to kill Gideon by morning. But Gideon is alive, so Baal must not have the ability. Meaning it's retrospective. It's, if Gideon is still alive now, I guess that means that the Baal doesn't have any power. All of these are legit reads of the sentence. You could really take the sentence either way. But the clear application of this, and we already referenced this last time, is the Terach-Abraham relationship. So I brought you to refresh your memory, source number 16. This is the classic Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah on Abraham and his father's idols. Terach oved tzlamim haya. Terach was an idolater. Chadzman, but that's not what it means here. Oved tzlamim, right? I might have thought meant idol worshiper, but that's the way I translated on here, but I should really translate it as an idol maker. Oved here means he is a maker of statues. Chadzman nafak la'asar, hoshev la'avraham mocher tachtav. One time he had to go wherever it was he had to go, and he said, Avram, do me a favor, look after the store in my place. So, hava asi bar inish boy diazbin. Somebody came along, wants to buy. Vava amarle bar kamashnin at. So Avraham would ask the person, how old are you? Vava Amar Le Bar Chamshin, or Shisin, the person would say, I'm 50 years old, I'm 60 years old. Vava Amar Le, Vaile Lehu Gavra, Dava Bar Shisin, Uboy Le Miskad Le Bar Yomi. He says, I can't believe that you want to, you know, bow to this days-old thing. You're already a 50-year-old man. Why are you bow to this? Vava Mizbayish Vava Lichlo. And the person would be ashamed and he would leave. Now, clearly this is an oversimplification of Avodah Zarah. Meaning, it wasn't that they believed that the idol made a few days ago is in and of itself worthy of honor and so forth. It was representing a system of worship. It was channeling some kind of power. However they read it. Nonetheless, Chadzman asa chad itasa te'ina biyada chad apinoch desoles. At some point, a woman came along and she was carrying a measure of flour. Amrole heilach Krav kud mehon, and she says to Avraham, here, take this flour and bring it as a carbon to before the idols. So come nasiv bukalsa biyadeh v'tavreyon lekulon psilaya. So Avraham takes an axe and he smashes all of them. V'yav bukalsa v'yadu d'rabadava b'neon, and he puts this hatchet, or the axe, in the hands of the greatest of the idols. Kevin d'asav, amale, manav alahon kedain. His father comes back, he says, what happened to my inventory? Right, who did that? So amale, manich bar minach, he says, I cannot tell a lie. Asas chada itasa, te'ina lachada pinach tasolas. This woman came along, she had a measure of flour. Va'amrali heilach kriv kudmeon, and she said to me, here, take this and bring it as a carbon to one of them. And kriv the kudmeon, I put it before them. Havadein amar ana eichu kadmoi. And sure enough, one idol said, I'm eating first. Vadein amar ana eichu kadmoi. Another one said, I'm eating first. Kam hadein rabadava b'neon, nasa bukalsu dvarinun. And what happened? It was a terrible scene. The largest of them grabbed the hatchet and broke the other ones. Amarle mata mafladi viadininun. He says, well, are you making fun of me? They don't know anything. The Amarle velo yishmu as nechama shapicha omer. So he says, do you hear what you're saying? But it didn't end the same way. Nasbe umasre leNimrod. Right? The ending of the story is Terach gives Avram over to Nimrod. In our story, Yoash defends his son. So, maybe this is sort of like a Heshiv Levavos Albanim, right? That Hashem is going to unify the parents and the children. In our story, it does seem like Yoash is trying to help Gideon. Where did the conversion come from? Possibly from Gideon's own deed. The very fact that Gideon really did. He smashed the idol, so to speak. He broke the Mizbech. He cut down the Asherah. He brought a carbon to God. And he's in one piece. That sends a message to Yoash. And so Rashi believes that Yoash is sincere. If you take a look at source number 17. He was just stalling for time. He wants to get his son to safety. That's the way that Rashi understands what he's doing. And interestingly, the people listened to Yoash. As Ralbag notes in number 18, we've already said this, he was the chief idolater. That's why the altar is on his property. So the idol is being rejected by its chief worshippers at this point, father and son. And Gideon is going to be successful because Gideon is going to end up leading the people into battle. So that the message that you draw from this story is that if someone will reject the Avodah Zarah, especially someone who comes from that background, people are going to follow him. People are willing to go along.
But yeah. He already had the 10 people had to be following him.
Well, they were among his servants.
Okay, so they weren't actually...
Yeah, this is the boss said do this. So
okay.
Yeah. The closing note on this, I just want to sum up some of the Avraham comparisons. We're going to come back to Avraham later on. But you have obviously the Medrash of Avraham destroying Terach's idols as one point of comparison. You have Yoash's refusal to turn him over. Saying it's heresy against the Baal to presume that he needs us to fight for him. That's actually unlike what happens, I guess, with Avram. I mean, but what it is really Yoash's argument, Baal can fight for himself, is like Avram's argument of, well, the idols must have done this because you believe they have power. And if you don't believe they have power, then how did this happen? Right? Then why are you worshiping them? So it's really a Yoash analogy to Avraham. The request that he makes for a miracle, I don't remember whether I noted this when we did it, but in Pasuk Tetvav, when he said last, it was what we saw last time, Bama Oshia et Yisrael, with what shall I save Israel? Right, Abraham's request of Hashem, Bama Eidaki Irashana. How do I know that I will inherit the land, or with what shall we inherit the land? And then you have the common language, which we're not even done seeing. We're going to see more of it. Remember that Abram speaks to Hashem to defend Sodom, and he says, "Va'adabra ach hapam." I want to speak just this once more. Gideon is going to use the same phrase before the end of the parak when he is talking to a malach. And then, of course, you also have this measure of flour that they use. That's the same. There's a lot here linking Abraham and Gideon, and that's something that we'll have to watch develop and talk more about. I think that's probably a good spot, because then we get into his second encounter and miracle and second mission. So, all right. So let's pick up with that, God willing, next week.
All right. Sure.